This is the Northeast Ohio AFSC Weekly Audio Podcast. I'm Greg Coleridge. It is Friday, the 24th of February. Thanks so much for listening. We seek every week to inform you about issues you feel are important, to update you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspire you to take action, hopefully. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that always create real change. We begin with a summary of events from last week that we were involved in, and that began with last Friday, a meeting to plan for what is being now touted as a Cleveland March for People, Peace, and the Planet. Fund human needs, not corporate greed, that will take place on Tax Day, April the 15th, in downtown Cleveland, beginning in the morning, with a circling of the federal building and a march to Cleveland State. Plans are underway to have this event be quite large and diverse among people and organizations and issues. So planning for that is ongoing. Last meeting was last Friday. Next one next week that I'll mention in a moment. Good event, good planning, good energy, good participation. Last Tuesday, this previous Tuesday, I participated in a meeting, and there was also a press conference associated with the a petition to ban Muslims that is against doing that, that has been put together by a number of individuals here in Northeast Ohio. I helped with that. AFSC had a role in helping draft the language for that petition against the creation of a so-called Muslim registry. And if one is created, then a commitment to try to gum up the process by encouraging non-Muslims to sign and to participate as calling themselves Muslim. And hopefully by doing so, then overwhelming those who will have to go through the process of discerning who is and who is not a Muslim. Anyway, this was an event that took place as at the Masjid Bilal in Cleveland this past Tuesday, sponsored by a number of organizations, including AFSC, and featured U.S. Congressperson Marsha Fudge, who covers a good part of the Cleveland area as well as a good part of Akron area as a congressional representative. The mayor of Cleveland, Frank Jackson, was there. Both spoke very strongly against such a wide-sweeping stereotype and overwhelmingly discriminatory message and so-called executive order that came out of the Trump administration concerning this Muslim ban that, if you recall, he declared, in his words, perfect and beautiful, that he has since pulled and yanked and will not be going to court to challenge this, since he, or at least his people, have somehow convinced him that this is not so beautiful and not so perfect and simply is flat out unconstitutional as, in fact, a de facto religious ban against Muslim people. Anyway, that was a good event, and resistance continues to grow. We have mentioned before that this petition is out there and encourage people to sign. You can find a link to that on our webpage, afsc.org/Akron. It's also linked on our Facebook page. Scroll down a couple weeks, you'll find it there. Maybe we'll repost it here today. So it's higher up in the wall. Anyway, that was a good event, and we'll continue to try to get people to participate. Coming up next week are a number of activities that we're going to be a part of. I and others with AFSC will be at a town hall meeting. That these have been taking place all over the country at the congressional district level. Marsha Fudge is having one tomorrow, that being Saturday at 10 o'clock at the Corporate College at 4400 Ridge Road in Warrensville Heights. Everyone is encouraged to attend and presumably will have an opportunity to speak about issues, concerns, proposals, resolutions, bills that individuals would like to see the Congresswoman support, promote, get behind. Sunday, at 3 o'clock, a number of people in Shaker Heights, Cleveland Heights, South Euclid will be participating, and I will be facilitating a movement education program that is part of the National Move to Amend campaign that seeks to help people understand the breadth and depth and interconnections between issues of and topics of oppression and social movements and democracy, self-determination, oligarchy, plutocracy, corptocracy, all of these together. So that is a gathering beginning at 3 o'clock in Shaker. Actually, we've rotated. Last meeting was in Shaker Heights, that first of this series. This meeting is in Cleveland Heights. If you'd like more information, call our office, 330-928-2301. Monday, beginning at 6:30, is the Brecksville Democracy Day, which is a gathering that occurs every 2 years to discuss the effects of money on the political process, and it represents a great opportunity for citizens in that community to get together and fairly respectfully, as has happened two other times. This will be the third Democracy Day there in Brecksville following passage of their Move to Amend initiative back in 2012. The first one basically in the state along with Newburg Heights. They passed them the same November. Brecksville was the most contentious in that the mayor and council challenged the placement of this citizen-driven initiative on the ballot, went to the Board of Elections, tried to get it thrown out, went to the Secretary of State, John Houston, tried to get it thrown out, went to the Ohio Supreme Court and tried to get thrown out. And in each and every case, the Board of Elections, Secretary of State, and Ohio Supreme Court said, let the people decide. And so this measure appeared on the ballot, and despite opposition, organized opposition by the mayor, from the mayor and council, it nevertheless passed. And one of the provisions, in addition to calling on Congress to pass a Move to Amend We the People amendment, constitutional amendment to abolish corporate personhood and money of speech, is the creation of this Democracy Day. And so this will take place the 27th, that's this Monday, 6:30 p.m. at the Brecksville Human Service Center, 2 Community Drive in Brecksville. It's somewhat unclear whether anyone can testify or only residents of Brecksville in the past. It's been pretty much open to anyone. We'll see what it's like on Monday, but certainly several of us connected to AFSC will be there. And it is a public meeting, whether you live in Brecksville or not. Tuesday, there'll be a program, Creating Real Democracy in Our Nation in Communities in Northfield at the Compadres Restaurant, 10333 Northfield Road in Northfield. A presentation, discussion, and action planning meeting that will sort of review and assess and update people about what is going on concerning the rising up of resistance to the Trump administration and many of the cabinet nominees and early public policy proposals and executive orders, but more than just simply saying no and reacting and resisting to such proposed orders, laws, and regulations is the importance, the essential nature of saying yes to something, of promoting something that will not only be more affirmational, but also in the long run more effective in trying to change profoundly some of the laws, rules, and regulations that move in the direction of real, authentic democracy and self-governance. And Toward that end, we'll be updating and giving a report on where the National Move to Amend campaign stands and other movements out there that are trying to sort of redefine and reshuffle the deck in creating laws and rules and regulations that are much more small d democratic, that give people without money and power an authentic voice, and a lot more than just simply electing surrogates who may or may not, oftentimes the latter, represent the interests of the average person. So anyway, that begins at 5:30, Compadre's Restaurant, 10333 Northfield Road in Northfield. Join us for dinner and program, and look forward to seeing those of you who may live in Northfield or know of people in Northfield. Let them know about it. More details about it is on our Facebook page, so check that out. Or if you would like more information, call our office, 330-928-2301, and we can give you some more information. March 1st, which is Wednesday, there is a meeting. It's actually the second organizational meeting of the Cleveland Area Labor Fight Back Network Associates, who are helping to plan what will be a third national conference of the Labor Fight Back Network, taking place in Cleveland, July 21st through 23rd. The planning meeting, second one, to take place this Wednesday, March 1st, will be held at 5 o'clock from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at North Presbyterian Church, 4515 Superior Avenue in Cleveland. The purpose of this Fight Back conference is to reassess and to strategize on how to make labor a more effective force, and not just simply try to respond and react concerning its very survival, which seems to be sort of a legitimate question at the moment, that for labor to be more than simply a bit player these days or heading toward the road of extinction, which sort of seems to be the general direction at the moment, in large part, labor needs to be more forceful and more aggressive and more radical. And toward that end, ideas, strategies, tactics, coalitions will no doubt emerge at this Labor Fight Back Network gathering. I've had the privilege of attending both first and second ones, and participate leading workshops at either, and I'm happy to be a part of the planning of this third national conference. So again, the planning for that, and it is open to anyone, is this Wednesday, March 1st, 5 o'clock at North Presbyterian Church, 4515 Superior Avenue in Cleveland. March 2nd, I will be, that's Thursday, I'll be speaking at the University of Akron at a social policy graduate level class on AFSC and social movements. That is at the Polsky's building, not quite sure what room, but if you want to sort of sit in on that, give our office a call, 330-928-2301. And that, again, begins at 6 o'clock. And then next Friday is the next meeting. We'll make mention of it again next week, also at 11 o'clock, of the planning committee to pull off this Cleveland Tax Day March for People, Peace, and the Planet. Details of which, there's a Facebook page on it. If you are a Twitter person, you can hashtag CLE Tax Day March. That's CLE Tax Day March, all one word. That's hashtag CLE Tax Day March. Or go to the Facebook page to find out more details about that gathering. And that planning meeting, which will take place next Friday, that's March 3rd, 11 o'clock at 3500 Lorraine Avenue. That's the offices of Organize Ohio. Turning now to some comments on a couple news items from this past week, and it is always always a challenge to figure out what to lift up, since there are so many, just a mind-numbing number of potential candidates to give commentary about, but one that just struck me on a number of levels this week that brings together several of the issue areas that we kind of focus on and address in one way or another, had to do with the confirmation hearings and eventual vote to confirm Scott Pruitt, who was confirmed and sworn in this week as head of the U.S. EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, under the Trump administration. The incredible political power and even more insidious governing power of corporations was revealed. Yet again, this is certainly not the first, just maybe the latest, this week with the release of thousands of emails obtained by an organization called the Center for Media and Democracy. Lisa Graves heads that up. Run into her at the Democracy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin over the last couple of years. Real strong person. She was pretty early on as well connected to Move to Amend. Anyway, very good organization, and they 2 years ago sought to obtain emails from the office of former Oklahoma Attorney General, a guy by the name of Scott Pruitt, to find out what sort of shenanigans and communication may have been taking place between his office and the fossil fuel industry. And it took 2 years for those emails to be released. Unfortunately, the vote to confirm the climate change denier Pruitt, on top of everything else, he is adamant in denying the fact that human actions in any way, shape, or form are affecting the climate. That the vote to confirm him took place ahead of what was known to be scheduled release of these emails by Senate Republicans, despite calls by Senate Democrats to hold off on his confirmation until one could see, and in particular senators could see what were in the emails and whether or not any of the contents of those emails might impact their judgment and their ultimate vote to confirm or not Scott Pruitt. The emails, according to the Center for Media and Democracy in a press release, show, quote, a close and friendly relationship between Scott Pruitt's office and the fossil fuel industry, unquote. The emails show extensive communications with hydraulic fracturing corporations, in particular Devon Energy Corporation, between Pruitt's office and that particular company. These emails showed not only discussions and communications back and forth about energy-related issues like the proposed U.S. Bureau of Land Management fracking rules, which Devon Energy Corporation was very much opposed to, but also more targeted and tangential matters, I guess you could say, like how a proposed airline merger might affect Devon's international travel costs. They also show a very close relationship with groups such as Koch Industries, and in particular the Koch-funded Americans for Prosperity. In one email, Pruitt asks, quote, any suggestions, unquote, to a Devon Energy Corporation VP when formulating a legal challenge to the Bureau of Land Management federal fracking rule. Devon Energy director replied with suggested changes to Pruitt's office. The next day, Pruitt's office sent the final draft of the letter to Devon, which replied, quote, I'm glad the Devon team could help, and thanks for all your work on this, unquote. An attorney for the Center for Media and Democracy said, quote, there are hundreds of emails between the AG's office, Devon Energy, and other polluters that senators should have been permitted to review prior to their vote to assess Pruitt's ties to the fossil fuel industry, unquote. Why this didn't happen is very simple to explain. The political potency of the fossil fuel industry and their defenders in the highest level of government in helping write laws and regulations. Devon Energy wasn't just simply, and others in the fossil fuel industry, they're not simply these days only lobbying and providing campaign contributions and or investments. They are, and it's nothing particularly new. It's been going on, but it's just the pace and race of it is happening more frequently. They are actually writing the laws, the rules, the regulations. They are seated at the table, not just kind of encouraging public officials to do the right thing. They are seated next to, if not maybe on top of, some of the public officials in drafting and getting input and providing input and suggesting language. If you recall, a couple of years ago, same thing happened with Jamie Dimon and the financial industry in writing some of the rules regarding the so-called regulations of the financial industry. This stuff is happening across the board, across industries, and it is insidious, which is why ending corporate personhood and the influence of money in elections certainly will not completely solve, but can and would reduce the governing influence of corporations in our society. This is just one more example why we need the We the People Amendment. Sort of a side note here, also related to Trump's cabinet. And there is a new study by the group Hedge Clippers that was able to total, and this is a very conservative estimate since there are some reports, financial disclosure reports, that only give a range of wealth of prospective nominees. And so I think in general they took the lower number of the range. But the Hedge Clipper study shows that, as released this week, that the total network of the new Trump administration's advisors and cabinet members exceeds $63.1 billion. Billion dollars. Just to put that into context, according to the study, that sum exceeds the gross domestic product of Luxembourg, the country. The 20 cabinet appointees and members of the Strategic and Policy Forum and Economic Advisor Councils have a net worth exceeding that of the combined bottom 40% of all Americans. So another way to look at that $63.1 billion figure. Just staggering. Companies run by Trump appointees and advisors have outsourced American jobs, foreclosed on tens of thousands of homes, and left billions in outstanding tax disputes with the IRS. Doesn't seem like a real recipe for how to drain the swamp, yet that's basically what we've got. Next up is the state of poverty in Ohio and the state budget. An organization that very good at the state level, very worth while following, is called the Advocates for Ohio's Future. Their website is advocatesforohio.org, and they released this week what they call their Ohio Poverty Snapshot Resource Card. That is literally a card that can be printed out or sent to you if it's heavier paper, that on the one side shows the federal poverty guidelines for 2017 by household size and what the amount of money it takes to reach the 100 percentile, 138, 150, 200, and 400 percentile amount, sort of a grid. And on the other side, it shows the most common Ohio jobs that leave families still needing assistance, food aid, Medicaid, or cash assistance. under the hashtag of hashtag poor while working. And it shows that in Ohio, anyway, those prevalent jobs that still leave individuals under the poverty level, the worst for that is if you are in food preparation and serving, or waitressing or waiter, cashier, you're still at 96% of the poverty level for 2016. The other previous two occupational groups of food prep and waitresses and waitering were at 94%. Home health aides is just 103%. Retail sales, 105%. Janitors, cleaners at 112%. Stock clerks and order filers, 112%. And 118%, I mean, and it sort of slightly goes up from there. But these are the most prevalent jobs that just simply don't pay enough to get out of poverty. Yet thousands upon thousands of people have them, including the poor. So the poor in the state of Ohio, which numbers as of 2014, or at the end of 2015, is 1.5 million. And the reality is that it's expensive to be poor. Ohioans living below the poverty line pay more on necessities like rent, childcare, groceries, and are often caught in a debt trap that gets worse when they are forced to turn to payday lenders to make ends meet. How all of this relates to the budget? Well, we've commented over the last couple of weeks that the new Kasich budget, biennial budget that is out, calls for big cuts to the income taxes, particularly for the well-to-do, while increasing the sales taxes, which disproportionately affect low-income and working people. With some tiny exceptions, the budget underinvests in almost every important public need. And in particular, among the needs that would help individuals get out of poverty here in Ohio, including affordable housing and child care, expanding tax credits for childless workers and the poorest children, fighting childhood hunger, putting money into that, expanding Medicaid, dealing with the whole predatory lending operation that's sort of outside the budget, but nevertheless is a complementary piece, as is raising the minimum wage and requiring paid sick leave. So there are budgetary items that are not happening, and there's certainly other public policies that could take place here in Ohio that would certainly address and reduce the number and percentage of people in Ohio that have fallen victim to poverty. The slight good news is that the poverty level in Ohio fell from 15.8% in 2014 to 14.8% in 2015, and that translated into 111,000 Ohioans that moved above the poverty line, but still 1.5 million Ohioans are in poverty, and even many of those who moved out or above the line are just barely above the line, the 105 percentile, for example. So technically, they are not quote-unquote poor, but are just barely making do, and that's relative, of course, because we're seeing costs and prices of many things going up, and if the tax policies of the Kasich budget goes into effect, well, of course, that's going to make matters worse with sales taxes increasing, which is going to increase the prices of just about everything that low and moderate income people and working people purchase. So it is a problem. It's not inevitable. It is not irreversible. Poverty is largely a function of conscious and deliberate public policies that can be changed if we have the will to do so. So it's our job to have that will individually, and to communicate that will and pressure our elected representatives to do the right thing and act on behalf of the poorest Ohioans amongst us. And finally this week, a real insightful piece, well worth reading and reflecting on, that was posted on the website of the Shalom Center. at theshalomcenter.org, which is a organization that promotes a prophetic voice in Jewish, multi-religious, and American life. This was the second part of a piece entitled Right Now, Resist, Rethink, Recreate, penned by or typed by Rabbi Arthur Wazkow this past week, dated the 20th of February. And resist, rethink, and recreate is, as the rabbi says, three ways of regrowing democracy despite an anti-democratic U.S. government. And basically, they're fairly self-explanatory, but very well organized. Number one, saying that as we look to try to create or recreate, depending on how you want to look at it, or as he says, regrow democracy in this current environment, number one, first thing we have to do is to resist that which is right in our face, that is oppressive and is racist, anti-public school, anti-public health, anti-labor, anti-earth, you name it, that which is out there that needs to be spoken against physically with our bodies, protested against. We need to do that. And certainly the events this week taking place all over the country with people showing up and saying their piece at town hall meetings, several of which taking place took place here in Ohio, in Northeast Ohio, one taking place, as previously mentioned, tomorrow. If you are in Marsha Fudge's district, and if you are, that's tomorrow, as previously mentioned, at 10 o'clock. Should also say that if you are in Renacci's district, Representative Renacci, Jim Renacci, there is going to be a protest tomorrow at 3 p.m. out in Parma at 7335 Ridge Road. That's his Parma district office. So these things do represent one form in many types of resistance that is taking place and needs to occur, and similar things like it in the future. Over the next couple of months. And as the rabbi says, including the upcoming April 29th, major People's Climate March and movement that will be national, but also includes more locally what previously mentioned, the April 15th Tax Day March for People, Peace, and the Planet taking place in Cleveland. So these represent things to resist that are worthy to do. The second strategy, he says, that we must do is to rethink. And here he specifically refers to many things that we need to rethink. The assumptions, in particular, of what American democracy means. Rethinking is necessary because the, as the rabbi says, the Trump-Pence-Bannon coalition is right about one thing. They are right that for important parts of American society, the globalization model in economics and culture is not working. So we need to rethink the relationship between the old America that now feels cast out economically, culturally, spiritually, and the new America, which thinks it is the wave of the future but feels disempowered in the present. We need to rethink our top-down political parties, the power of hyper-wealth, over our elections, the precariousness of our voting rights, including the built-in blockages against democratic decision-making. We need to re-examine the nature of coalitions between groups of people and organizations that may share some agendas but disagree on others. We need to rethink the roles of neighborhoods, urban and rural, in giving life to democracy. We need to rethink the nature of jobs, work, and income in our increasingly computerized and robot-enabled society. We need to rethink how we think, the processes of education, culture, media, old and new. And he says we even need to rethink religion and what that means. So a nice piece there in talking about rethinking, and won't go into a lot of the other details. You can check that out. The third area or theme of this article is recreate. And here he talks about the many efforts locally, at the community level, in neighborhoods and cities, and even at the level of a few states, like in California and Washington, where resistance is transforming or at least leading to creating alternatives. Cities declaring their police forces not to comply with federal edicts concerning the treatment of immigrants ordered by the Trump government is one example. Sanctuary communities being another. But other communities entering into economic areas like California, state legislators proposing a single-payer healthcare system. This at the state level. Efforts to deal with the climate crisis. Again, in California, there is some rumblings about pursuing a massive statewide solarization program. It may seem tough to imagine that at your state, but hey, why not consider that? And what would it take to convince, the rabbi says, your city council, your board of education, to take up efforts at trying to create policies that improve the human condition, that promote health, safety, and welfare at the local level, the municipal level, where you are? Are you ready to organize such a campaign? Imagine synagogues, churches, mosques, PTAs, labor union locals that not only solarize their own buildings but create loan funds to assist their congregants and members to solarize their homes and businesses. So much here to take in, much to, I think, rethink as we resist toward, at the same time, recreating. These need to go together as a package. It's always about trying to say no to something, but at the same time saying yes to something, to respond to what we feel is wrong at the same time that we're trying to implant a substitute for what we think is right. That's all for this week. Keep up with our activities. Contact us with questions, concerns, or willingness to help out. Our phone is 330-928-2301. Website afsc.org/Akron. Facebook page, facebook.com/NEOAFSC. Program blog, northeastohioafsc.wordpress.com. My blog, createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.